It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, it's becoming obvious. We just got home yesterday and I haven't yet had a shower today. I had showers every day where we were staying, but it's very clearly like the water pressure or alkalinity or something is different because my hair just doesn't look like my hair at the moment. So, all right. We come down to the only thing that matters about the Thanksgiving holiday. Competition. Me and you. In your estimation, and we don't sit around marking little jabs on a note board or whatever, so this just has to be a good faith guess. How many pieces of pie over the whole span?
Oh,
this is riveting podcasting. I can't believe you don't have that number to hand.
Well, because it's one of two answers. It's either there was either one, only one. I think it's just one.
What's the alternative?
Two.
Okay, then I don't had another care.
One. I might have had another one.
Blew you out of the water. And I have to say, amongst my people, there were a tremendous number of good pies and very little pie eating. I had to start easing back to a degree because I felt bad. My wife didn't even have any pie until Saturday because she kept just eating too much in her other meals. But I very quickly had pie after every meal, including breakfast. By my guess, and again, this is approximation, I think it was 11 pieces of pie.
Wow.
Here's what I know for sure. It was 3 pieces of fruit pie. 2 were raspberry, blackberry, I don't know, and 1 was a blueberry. Anyway, 3 pieces of fruit pie. 2 pieces of the Toll House pie my wife made. And then I think basically a pumpkin pie. Like, I don't know for sure. There were 2 pumpkin pies. I ate a lot of pumpkin pie. I think I probably ate about a pie's worth.
I had two because I remember eating one with whipped cream, but that wasn't here at this house. But I remember eating one at this house. So it must have been 2.
For the record, every single piece of pie had an embarrassing amount of Ready Whip on it, except the blueberry pie, which had vanilla ice cream.
Oh, nice. I'm you know, not going to lie. I wish I'd had a whole pie, a whole pumpkin pie. I love pumpkin pie, but I think I had just 2 pieces. Which was
no, I was having pie nonstop. I don't
nice
like big food holidays, of which Thanksgiving is arguably the greatest in this country. There's always a lot of different things going through my head of like, how excited am I for the particular food? How much is available? How well was it done? How have I been eating in general, and do I feel guilty or less guilty, or how invested am I that like this is going to be a year where I get to just do whatever, or this is going to be a year where I'm going to watch it. I don't know what the fuck happened this year. I just ate like nonstop and didn't even feel bad, like, at all. Like, I didn't even be like, oh, it's too much. I had to be the guy at Thanksgiving. I'm never this guy. As we finished Thanksgiving dinner, and Mom has to stay as she does, we have pie now if you want. And everybody's like, oh. And somebody finally said this here. Nobody ever wants pie right after the meal. And I had to be like, yeah, no, nobody. Definitely. We're all normal people here. We definitely wouldn't eat a bunch of pie right now. I don't know what it was. It's just all, it all came to me. I actually one day had leftover broccoli and rice casserole for all three meals in the day. Yeah. But mostly pie. A lot of pie.
Well, my son-in-law and daughter, there's certain things they can't eat, which makes it so they can't say buy a pie, or, you know, even a pie you could buy and bake. Can't usually get those. So my son-in-law and I went to the store to see if we could find something, anything. And we found some phyllo dough that they could both have. And I said, well, why don't we go get some like pie filling or something and a few other things and see if you guys can make a dessert that you both can have.
Yeah.
He never heard of canned pie filling before, so he thought I was making that up. But there was some there at the store
next to the striped paint.
So they made they did make a kind of a phyllo type of, almost a turnover type of dessert.
Yeah,
it turned out really good, but it was the first time my daughter had made anything like that, and so she thought she could improve it and make it better. So hopefully they have a thing they can make now, where, because they talked about how they often can't have desserts together because some things one of them can eat, some the other thing, you know, can't.
Yeah.
But here was something that they could maybe make, you know, that they both could eat. So hopefully that's something. But I thought it was good. She made enough for me to have, and I thought it was really good. So whatever improvements she makes, it's probably going to be amazing.
Have you ever heard of Toll House Pie?
I mean, yes, I think I have. I don't know if I've ever had it, and I'm not entirely sure what it is. I would guess it's a kind of a pan cookie type thing.
No, weirdly, it's like a normal apple pie, but it charges you $1 every time you cross by the road. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's not very good. No, I, in my head, I had heard of it because my wife talked about it as if it was no thing. She's like, so I just said, I'll just bring a Toll House pie. And my brain was like, oh yeah, she's definitely made that before, right? That's a thing. It's probably cookie related.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, she never made it before. She looked it up recently and decided it would be a thing. And none of us had ever made it or had it or nothing.
Oh, well, I know I've heard of it. I'm pretty sure I've never had it.
It's good.
Well, what is it exactly?
I mean, it is basically what if a chocolate chip cookie were a pie, but you're picturing a chocolate chip cookie that is essentially the size and shape of a pie. It's not the same thing here. Yeah, oh, No.
Okay.
This is what if a chocolate chip cookie were a pie, an actual pie.
Not just the way pie-shaped cookie.
Yes. Yeah. And the way they do it is, they use, I mean, I don't know, I don't make pies, but they use, I assume, mostly sugar. There's a consistency in it that is not dissimilar from the consistency inside of a pecan pie. And that is mixed with a lot of components that you might associate with cookie dough. And so it comes out more pie consistency, but all the flavors are still chocolate chip cookie, and it had pecans in it, and we specifically Trisha didn't want to make a crust and didn't want to do graham cracker crust, and so she was hoping for a shortbread crust. I couldn't find any pre-made, so I actually ended up getting a pecan pie crust, which was basically just a crust of sweetened pecans, and it came out real nice. I was very pleased. It might have to show up as a tradition more often though, because it's pretty good. But yeah, she thought of it as something in between like a pecan pie and a derby pie. I don't know if that's something you're familiar with.
No.
It's a regional thing, probably in Kentucky. I don't know. And it's kind of pecan pie, but it also has layers of chocolate involved. And so it's more of a chocolate caramely kind of vibe. But yeah, pie. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where if you die while listening to the podcast, you also die in real life. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 663.
663. That'd mean nothing to me. That's on like the next block over from the beast. That's hardly anything. For those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like to write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. The hat magically forwards it to us. We read it, talk about it. That's pretty much it. So it's basically via magic, we've come up with a slightly more complicated way to do email.
Yeah.
So call us J.K. Rowling, except we're less transphobic. How was your holiday times?
It's good,
Mr. William.
We had the kids over on the day, stayed overnight and all that. It was nice. Went to the farm on Saturday. It was snowing when we were coming back. We had about
Thursday, you just chilled.
The kids were over on Thursday.
I thought they were coming on Friday. I thought that was the official kids hate us day.
It is, but they came over on the day and then stayed overnight till then. See? So we had them 2 days, and then Saturday we went down to the farm, and then it snowed. I think we got about 3 inches of snow, but we didn't have to shovel or anything because the ground is warm enough that everything, the driveway was.
We had the same thing.
Melted.
There was, I had to sweep off the steps because they're pretty steep porch steps and I didn't want to go down them as they were, but that was it.
Yeah. But it's been cold still. So the snow's not melting or anything, so
yeah, it's gonna be rough today.
Let's see what else. We're still watching that Bass Reeves show, which is really good. We also watch Gilded Age, which is the sort of
the TV show.
Yeah, the
okay,
you know, the people who made Downton Abbey are making this thing.
Yeah.
Period piece about.
There just also was a film many years ago by that title, so I always
gotcha. Wanted to be no, sure. this is the TV show made by those people, and it's set like in the late 19th century New York City. You know, but it's about a group of people. Let's face it, a class of people that I'm usually not interested in. I don't mean to be classist against rich people, but I mean the way I was raised, don't really ever
it I've just never doesn't really... ever give the wealthy elite its fair chance.
I just, like I said, the way I was raised, whatever the rich people are doing, never cared. But there's pretty good writing in it. There's very good acting. But the real reason to watch this, if you're a person that likes the craft of filmmaking and you can really appreciate those aspects, the costuming is just unbelievable. Like even someone with as crude an eye as I've got constantly spots something. I'm like, wow, look at that. Look at the colors. Look at the embroidery on that. I mean, just amazing stuff. And I can imagine someone who's more sophisticated than me would, their eyes would be popping out of their heads with some of the cool things that they make. The production design is really good too. I mean, if you can appreciate the craft of something, even if there's other aspects of it you don't like, I think anyone would really enjoy seeing what the costume designers and the set designers come up with this. And it's fun to watch. I mean, if you like Downton Abbey, I think you would like this.
Did I have a fever dream, or is Christine Baranski in this?
I'm blanking out on who that is.
She's done a lot of stuff on Broadway. She got the spinoff from The Good Wife called The Good Fight.
Yeah, she is in it. She is it.
Yeah. I adore her.
She's really good.
I'm still not going to watch it. I didn't watch Downton Abbey either. But she was my big one of like, oh, maybe I should watch this because I do love her. But
yeah, we're watching that. And it's actually quite good. I don't think we watched any, you know, big movies or anything. We don't watch a lot of stuff when the kids are over. We just sort of hang out with the grandkids and stuff, which is always nice.
They didn't force you to watch a terrible movie series?
Well, they couldn't come up. Oh, I think I might have said this before. They couldn't come up with anything.
I knew they were having trouble. I didn't know they were quitters. I didn't know you raised quitters and grand quitters.
Well, they were.
Delmer didn't even have nothing.
Well, we were worried about. They're worried about Delmer being scared, you know, and stuff.
Yeah. So you ask him, like, what won't scare you? And he's probably
he doesn't know.
Paranormal Activity movies are fine.
We did watch Flash Gordon, which was so bad. It was terrible.
But awesome. But it was awesome.
No, it wasn't awesome. Mm-mm. It was terrible.
Princess Ardala memorized her lines phonetically. She doesn't speak any English.
What?
Yeah. All of her lines in that movie, her English is almost non-existent. All of her lines in that movie, she learned them phonetically. It happens. That's not the only time I've heard of an actor doing that. But
huh.
Which you can tell, because some of the words she says have that weird pronunciation thing where it sounds like they were reversed and then played forward again, and somehow it sounds slightly different now. Like, father!
It was terrible. It was like...
But awesome! But also very, very awesome.
I mean...
And now you understand that if I ever in my life had a masculine role model and a bastion for what was masculinity, you've now seen it. It is Voltan, King of the Hawk People, played by Brian Blessed. He has always been my platonic ideal of manhood.
Oh, that explains.
And basically, he's that same person just in life. He just is always that loud and crazy. I love Brian Blessed.
I mean, I like Max von Sydow a lot. I mean,
yeah,
I just do. I like him, but it was so bad. It was just through and through awful.
Oh, but such a good time.
No.
It really, you don't know how to have a good time.
I probably don't.
I will never say Flash Gordon is a good movie, but I will say Flash Gordon is an awesome movie, and it is a real good time to watch. This is fun.
So yes, we did watch that.
It has some kick-ass music.
We bought a Blu-ray with the films from the 70s with Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Also, I'm sure I've only seen them both one time fully through, which is like in the theater or something, I think. Or unless the Battlestar Galactica was on TV, maybe that's where I saw it. But
well, Battlestar Galactica, is this a movie or a miniseries?
No, they may
have. Because even the original had a limited run because they kind of had to retcon some things afterwards. In the beginning, there's a series of them that they go through specific things, and then after that, it gets more episodic.
Oh, well, yeah, I seem to recall watching that they had a movie, and then I watched it, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's a limited series or something. But
I think at one point they cobbled together some things into movie-sized chunks also. And it is confusing because in the reboot, that also was a miniseries to start off and then became a series. And, yeah.
But Buck Rogers was also a movie and then a TV series. So what I wanted was the movies of both of those things, whatever those are. And so you could get them on a Blu-ray together. And we got that. And I thought, oh, I'd be interested in watching that, even though I'm sure I'm going to think they're as awful as Flash Gordon was. So I thought the kids would be entertained by me cringing at that. But we didn't end up watching that at all.
Buck Rogers, I think, would. I'm not sure how bad the original Battlestar Galactica is.
I've seen pieces of Buck Rogers again since I saw it the first time. The cringy, like, you know, the reason I've seen
Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon are both disco as hell. Is the main issue.
Yeah.
They're very much disco. And there is some of that, but less of that in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. And the leading characters in Buck Rogers and Flash are very similar in terms of, you know.
Well, and Buck Rogers leans into it hard because it's also a world in which disco happened and is currently playing out in the future. And
yeah, like he does some disco dancing.
I remember actual dance clubs he visits in Buck Rogers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about Buck Rogers, the one they made in the 70s is, so I thought the parts I've seen again, like I have to say, I haven't seen the whole thing again, but the parts I've seen, some of them will sort of give plot information, exposition and stuff. And so in the original Buck Rogers, in the original story, there's this, this group that's sort of taken over the United States. And at first it's hard to tell what it is. I think he wrote later stories where they were, it was an alien something or other, but in the first story, it seemed like it was like a Chinese or Asian or something. And it was also pretty racist if you looked at it that way. But in the new Buck Rogers, they changed things in a way that I thought was really interesting and would be timely now. If they redid it, they should do it the same way where Earth culture was sort of overseen and ruled, not really ruled, but just sort of managed by artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good idea to begin with, but also they did some things in the story that did make sense and was pretty compelling. It kind of got overshadowed by the camp and the 70s disco stuff. But
I mean, I believe the artificial intelligence were all just little circular light brights that little tiny robots were.
No, it was an interesting, they did really interesting things.
Oh, you aren't
talking
about Professor, what's his name, the Twiggy had on him?
Yeah. He was like,
yeah. Those were all the artificial, they were these little round light bright looking things.
Well, that's how they interacted.
They looked like the necklace that my toy would wear from that I got it at the store give it fire powers.
Okay. I thought it was interesting. And if they did it today, I think they should keep that idea and just, like, you know, make it better. And the idea was that when foreign powers, like foreign galactic powers, would come to take over the Earth, for example, that they didn't know how to deal with that because the artificial intelligence had sort of shaped humanity in a way where they wouldn't know what to do. And again, that harkens back to the original story, because the original Buck Rogers, you know, he goes into this cave and he gets a sort of suspended animation there, and he comes out hundreds of years later. And what's significant about him and his experience is he fought in World War I, and so he knows things about strategy and tactics that the people hundreds of years in the future don't know. So he has to help them push back on, you know, fight back their oppressors.
This sounds very similar to John Carter of Mars.
Well, yeah, probably is. I don't really know anything about John Carter of Mars. I know of it, but I don't really know anything
about
it.
It's also somebody who fought in that one, it was the Civil War, and then walks into a cave, but they end up on a different planet. But it's the same otherwise, kind of.
But the experience of this person who lived hundreds of years ago is useful to the people now for some reason. And in the new
Gil Gerard is just that good a dancer.
And in the new one, it's because artificial intelligence has made them sort of forget how to think for themselves or do things for themselves or whatever. So I think that would be interesting if they did something like that again, but I don't know if they ever will. So Buck Rogers, the problem with Buck Rogers is it's owned by some estate, and they're very picky about who does the story. And they just, they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot, because the more particular and whatever they are about letting people tell the story, the further away the story gets and the less people even want to do anything with it. So,
well, yeah,
I think they've harmed themselves.
And the TV show was a very troubled production in so many ways already. I don't think there's a lot of impetus, but, and also they already have the perfect one. It's Gil Gerard. Why do you need anything else? Just like they have the perfect Flash Gordon.
Anyway, but so how was, aside from all the pie, how was your thing?
I don't know. It was all pie and naps, just all the way down.
All the way down.
I did so little and ate so much pie and took so many naps. I don't like saying this. We are now Peacock Premium members for the time being.
Oh, what inspired that?
Black Friday sale is $20 for a year.
Wow.
And so I was like, yeah, let's try it. And I've set a reminder on my phone 11 months out that it's going to end, so that we can seriously think about it, because I don't know that I want to do it again. But for right now, I can watch Poker Face, and I can watch Columbo, and I can watch Murder, She Wrote, and that's mostly it. I guess I could watch Five Nights at Freddy's if I really wanted. I'm sure there's other things on there. There's stuff that they like to hide behind the paywall. I guess I could finally watch Rutherford Falls. I could watch that thing with Sue Perkins and Mel Giedroyc where they're hitmen.
Wow, you're so excited about it.
Happy holidays. Yeah. All right. No, I don't have much to talk about, but I do have one thing to talk about. Because one thing happened while I was at Thanksgiving, eating all the pie and all the everything else and napping all the time. I don't want to overstate this, so I'm just going to put it this way. I was in the room for a lot of episodes of Blue Bloods. So via sort of an osmosis, I have absorbed a lot of Blue Bloods. And that was a very odd experience. Have you watched Blue Bloods? Are you familiar with Blue Bloods?
I'm not sure I even know what that is.
Blue Bloods is an extremely popular show with old people. It has had many, many, many seasons. It is in the process of its last season. The show is spearheaded by its lead / patriarch, Tom Selleck. It is a show about cops. It is a show about a family of cops. It is in many ways sort of a throwback show to some of the earlier police procedural shows back in the day. But in this version, Tom Selleck is the chief of police for New York City. And various members of his family are in the police force. And he has a very large family. And it's just an ensemble show. And it's very strange. It's very political. And it has a lot of things to say about policing. And it actually discusses some real issues on occasion a little bit, but make no mistake, it is very pro police. And I think it is a show that is sort of designed to unite both people who are far right politically and people who are moderate right politically. And at first I was like, this is terrible. This is just propaganda. I don't like it. It's making a lot of false statements. It's doing a lot of fear mongering, other stuff. Also, the thing I can really not forgive it for is we're supposed to believe that Donnie Wahlberg is Tom Selleck's son. And I just don't.
Donnie Wahlberg's in it?
Yeah. And what's really funny is, even though he's obviously a very different sort of character, the mannerism and dress and everything is very much like when he played the detective in the Saw movies, who was a dirty cop who got killed really violently. And so it's just funny to see him in this wholesome, family-friendly cop show. But yeah, so Donnie Wahlberg's in it. And Tom Selleck and several other people you probably recognize. I don't know. But at first I was really bothered, but then I realized I've seen and liked a variation of this show many times before. This show is, Addy, I'm doing a podcast. The show is good in that it is well produced, well shot, well competently written. Well written gets tricky because then we get into the politics and how I feel about it, but it is competently written, quite well acted. It is interesting. It is engaging. It is a good quality television program. And when I stop and think about it, there are a lot of shows that I have liked that to me are just good quality, fairly non-political shows that if I stop and think, I'm like, well, they're really sort of left to moderate left leaning shows and very sort of assumptive politically in that way. So Blue Bloods is essentially like any other show I might watch, but it's the opposite political spectrum. And that's so rare for me, at least, when I see things that are like very opposed to the viewpoints I have. Often that comes at a price. Like the classic one people say is, you don't find funny conservative stand-ups. And there's a lot of complicated reasonings for that, and it's not as cut and dried as that, but that is commonly the case. And so it's a similar thing. When I find a show that is like so politically different from me, I'm like, yeah, it's also not a very good show. But this one, I'm like, I think the show would be fine, except for the messaging. And that's just very weird and also very insidious, because again, like my in-laws watch it, and I think if you asked them, they wouldn't say it's particularly political. I think my mom watches it, which I find very surprising, because again, it's very, but it's a lot of homespun wisdom, like, oh, you know, there are things to consider, but ultimately the cops are just trying to protect people and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It disturbed me. I watched a lot of it. I'm surprised you hadn't heard of it. It's a very big deal. It's what the older white people really like.
Nope.
Yeah. Now that most of our cozy mysteries have gone overseas, where it's cheaper. When you offshore your cozy mysteries, there's tax evasion issues and stuff. Anyway. Shut up. Give me an email. Oh. I'm tired of your crap. Not thankful.
All right, this is from Azure Talon.
I've heard of him.
Subject line is H.P. Lovecraft.
I've also heard of him.
Beings.
Oh, by the way, all stuffed up. Go to Illinois, which usually changes all the allergens around, so the stuff up. Still stuffed up the whole time. Come back, still stuffed up. Bleh. Sorry, go ahead.
Beings, he says. He's just calling us beings now, which I mean, brief but accurate, I guess.
Worse.
He says, we all know Lovecraft is racist. I don't know if everybody knew that, but that's,
yeah, Lovecraft was pretty racist.
Yeah, people who are familiar with him
look in the right places, but yeah,
I don't think there's even any debate about that.
No, I mean, a lot of his stories very clearly use terms that were grossly inappropriate at the time, and who theorized a lot of things about how evolved and unevolved different races of humanity were. And yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But he seems to have problems beyond that. I know I'm not breaking ground here, but I have always had the idea that he wasn't hateful. Wasn't a hateful, get on out of here racist, as he seems to genuinely be afraid of people that differ from him. I'm not sure I sense the difference. Is there a difference between hate and genuine phobia? Oh, I see. So he's drawing a distinction between someone who like has a mental illness of phobia, like they're scared of black people, like they're scared of spiders, versus a group that's like hateful, more in a, say, in a political and self-reflective way. Granted, he was probably some from column A and some from column B. If people can fear pickles, cotton balls, etc., could sometimes have a phobia of specific peoples, and is that someone to be derided or pitied slash helped? Azure Talon with his most legit question in a while. This is an interesting question. I don't know if I've ever drawn a distinction between those things. So is it a valid distinction?
Very interesting. There's also lots of assumptions built into some of the wording, though. I mean,
sure.
For
sure.
Started, I think all racists that I know should be pitied and or helped.
I can agree with that, too.
And in general, I don't think the deriding is necessary. I still do it a lot, but and in fact, I think there are a lot of people who fall into a weird in-between thing here, because I think it's quite easy in the proper sheltered environment for you to be raised to be phobic of other kinds of people. I think there are people out there who are, for example, scared of black people, not because they're jerks or because they think black people are inferior, but because they have been raised to fear black people.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're talking about just straight up ignorance, like a person that just doesn't, I mean, they don't know better because they've been taught a certain way. And some of those people, as soon as they are like forced into a situation where they have to interact with a black person, they almost immediately go, oh, I guess I was wrong about that. I mean, it doesn't take very much for them to let go of that when it's just sheer ignorance. That's
also
my observation anyway.
Having a phobia is not ever an excuse for something. In this sort of context, if someone is afraid of spiders, I might choose not to bring them places where there are spiders. I would not like throw out my pet spiders so that this person could move in with me. I would not tell spiders they're not allowed to show up in an area because that's where my friend likes to hang out. And I most certainly would not just be in a place with my friend and spiders and watch my friend just like freak out about it and just be like, yeah, I'm going to put up with this, and my spider friends are going to put up with this because this person has a phobia.
Well, no. Another thing about phobic people is they're often pretty aware they have a phobia, right? Like arachnophobia, like you're talking about. That person understands that they're phobic. Other people aren't. They also usually understand that it's not really the spider's fault. They don't hate the spiders, really. They don't, you know, they just don't want to be around them and so on and so forth. Yes. So many times, if a person is just phobic about something, like mental illness phobic, they can at the same time realize that this has nothing to do with black people or even me being white. This is some weird thing that I have to deal with, that it's not anyone else's problem. And they're not going to expect, you know, the world to adjust to what they're doing. And maybe they'll even seek help. A lot of phobic people seek help, but most people who are phobic are very aware that other people don't feel the same way they do about this thing, that it's irrational what they're going through. If it's a lot of arachnophobes don't seek help for it simply because they're not going to experience spiders very often. And when they do, they can get their spouse or someone else to deal with it. And that works. That's fine. But if someone was phobic about a certain group of people, class of people, or race of people, they'd probably have to do things about that because they're going to encounter these people in day-to-day life. And I mean, I think that's very, it is, that would be a very different situation than someone who isn't phobic, but they still hate a certain group of people.
Yeah. But I do think it becomes a very, very gray line.
Well, and you and I often, there before 2016 anyway, we used to use terms like racist and sexist, and we didn't often mean, like if we were using the term racist, we didn't often mean like a someone who was going to join the KKK or something like that. What we meant was a person who, by circumstance and or various other things, could only see the world through the lens of their own cultural and racial experience. And that being true could sometimes be insensitive to some other person's experience.
Yeah.
Or could sometimes not realize that they have certain privileges in our society that other ones don't.
Yeah, could be perpetuating certain institutions of which they are not even necessarily aware.
Right.
Well, which is how I assume somebody like Lovecraft comes to these conclusions. Lovecraft is a very wealthy, privileged white American in the 19th or the early 20th century. His experience with people who aren't white are not going to be great.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of people who are treated as just poor, dumb labor. We're going to have people who are not educated. We're going to have people with huge language barrier issues. We are going to have people who huge swaths of society consciously and unconsciously think of as basically animals. Mm-hmm. So it is unsurprising that he would think this way and would come up with a bunch of scientific explanations. He was one of those who was really into phrenology and all that kind of bullshit too.
Well, and Bram Stoker, I mean, you can see in a lot of his stuff, he definitely bought into the superiority of British culture and the empire and stuff. And then later in his life, when there was less of a filter, I mean, you know, straight out racist stuff in some of his stories. And it's like you said, he was raised in a culture. I mean, he was Scottish, wasn't he? So it's a little surprising that he was so pro-Britain, but he was. And in that environment, like you said, it's not surprising that given all of that influence that he would, you know, he would think, oh, yeah, of course, Britain is superior. And that's not just my political opinion. That's obvious when you look out in the world and how many people we've converted.
What is happening in my day to day life must be the universal human condition.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean, nowadays,
all the non-white people I know can't even sign their name. Therefore, they're just not as smart as... Sorry, all the non-white people I know can't sign their name. Well, therefore, they're just not as smart as the white people I know. Because all the white people I know can sign their names. And I cannot think of an explanation. Occam's razor says that means they're smarter.
It usually... And beyond that, you know, bad behavior of these groups, like if a person of color legitimately commits a crime, that's just going to get all the press in the world versus when a white person does. There's no difference between this was the same crime, whatever.
Yeah.
But when someone other does it, it's accentuated to a degree that it makes people think. I mean, this happens to black people in our country still. Non-white crime in general is treated so much different, and it really paints this inaccurate picture of crime in the United States. The vast majority of people, no matter what their race is, like between 93 and 95% of the people don't commit crimes or don't commit violent crimes anyway. You know, black people
and
don't
the rest
commit.
Of us, a lot of us don't get caught.
I'm just saying the rule is like I said, 93-95%. The rule for human beings, at least in this country, is we don't commit crimes. A tiny, tiny group of people do. Now, in that tiny group, Black men especially are disproportionately represented. But that doesn't say anything about the other 93 or 94% of Black people. But this is a thing that's kind of in the minds of Americans, and not just white Americans, Black Americans too, sometimes fail implicit bias tests and things when it comes to these things. So there's a lot of propaganda about Black crime.
And I think we could say the real Call of Cthulhu was a racist dog whistle.
Good one. I like it.
Also, I do want to put this out here on a slightly more serious note. I have discussed this before. Please take what I'm saying in the context I'm saying it. I have issues around people of very obvious disability, physical disability, and or the elderly and infirm. I have always been uncomfortable around such people, such that my mom even, because my mom worked in nursing homes and she would have me go and associate so that I would get used to it. I don't know why. It just never happened. And I'm always uncomfortable. I don't make it other people's problem. I make sure whenever I'm dealing with somebody like that to talk to them as I would talk to anyone else. If there is some sort of interface complication, as in somebody with cerebral palsy or whatever, I work really hard to still communicate the same as I would with anyone else, because there's no problem with their hearing or their understanding. So yeah, I can, it's not racism, but it's a similar thing. I have a completely irrational, wish I didn't have it, phobic sort of discomfort around people in that situation. And the answer is, yeah, that sucks a little bit internally for me. There's no reason it should have any impact on how I treat or act toward or am influenced by people like that. And I don't know if that means I should be helped or pitied or derided. Usually all three in some capacity. At any given point, I'm pretty probably worthy of all three of those.
I mean, I have no idea what. I'm usually in favor of very nuanced conversations about a person's issues around these things. But one thing I tend not to do.
You could have stopped after conversations. You are very in favor of heavily nuanced conversations.
What I mean is, like I said, we used to use terms like racism and sexism to mean simply you sometimes can't see beyond your own experience. I think I would hesitate to use those terms today when social media and a lot of other things have made it so that when you use that specific terminology, you're often talking about or you're accusing someone of being to hating women or hating other races so much, you know, that they oppose or support certain policies or they deserve to be equated with Hitler or whatever else. I mean, that's not what we ever meant.
See, I don't use them nowadays because I think they're too dilute. Everything is racist and everything is sexist, people. Yeah, and I'm not saying that with an eye roll. It is. And so it is useless to be like, that's sexist. Be like, almost certainly. I don't even know what you're talking about, but almost certainly.
So I appreciate nuance in these conversations, but there's one place I don't typically go, and I kind of disagree with people who do go here, is, well, that was how it was back then. You can't hold people to those same standards. Yeah, I don't do that, because here's the thing. In just about every case, you can find somebody somewhere in that society who was very vocal and was saying the right thing. And if they could do it, well, I'm sorry, anyone could.
It's not like abolitionists showed up right before the Civil War.
I understand if you're raised a certain way. Don't get me wrong. That I understand. But there's going to come a point in your human adult development where you can question whatever. You can question everything. You can question that. And there were other voices who were probably encouraging you to question it. And you had to go, nah, I'm going to stick with this racist or sexist right? idea. Well, I can't respect that. Like my own ancestors who did these things, I don't excuse them. I don't say, well, that was that. Nope. There's no excuse for
what they did. I do not excuse your ancestors either, admittedly, for slightly different reasons.
I mean, thankfully, I only had a few ancestors who engaged in that behavior, although I'm sure there were more of them who maybe didn't have slaves, but they were, you know, still had racist or sexist attitudes. I don't excuse that. I can't excuse that because there's everybody. My observation is human beings, especially when they reach a certain age or a certain maturity, they're capable of questioning everything. And usually you can see evidence of them questioning some things, right? They don't do everything that their parents did or everything that their tribe does. If they can question that tradition or culture or whatever else, they can question any of it. And either they won't, or they did, and they still came to the same conclusion. And so I'm going to hold them accountable for that, just like I expect people to hold me accountable for my decisions too. So I mean, that's how I feel about that. As nuanced as I like these conversations to be, I don't excuse an adult, a fully functional adult person for making their own choices or refusing to examine something when they're perfectly capable of doing so.
Well, and so much of it is taking responsibility for it. Like, it's amazing to me. I bring this up over and over and over again, but all the various scandals that celebrities get into, the ones you don't remember, the ones that disappear real fast, are the ones where people were like, yeah, that was bad of me. That sucked. I'm sorry. That was just dumb. I'll work real hard not to do that anymore. Those ones go away in a matter of days. The ones that we remember for years usually start with, come on, you guys, you know I'm not like that. I don't have a racist or whateverist bone in my body. I love women. All of those, but I'm not that kind of person is how those all start. And being able to be like, you know what? I was that kind of person and sorry. And that's something we all have to watch out for, and including me. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something you and I have been tried to be aware of ourselves and honest about, is that, you know, we're just human beings and we have a limited experience and blind spots and everything else. So of course we're going to,
I've killed a lot of people and I can't possibly remember well enough to be able to swear some of it wasn't racially motivated. There were just so many and I didn't take notes, but oh, I mean, God. So odds are.
Okay.
Sorry. William and I have killed a lot of people.
No, come on.
And actually, there are certain demographics where William seemed really to be chomping at the bit more than others.
Oh. Stop.
Willie Wright hates children. He built a house out of them. Willie Wright, extreme jackass billionaire. Oh,
he plays cards with children. Was it children? Does he play cards with children or little people?
Which he uses children as cards. No. Actually, I believe he uses little people as cards. That's not what we called it at the time. See, even our own stuff has not always aged.
But the joke was he plays cards with little people, which we mean by that he uses them as cards.
Yes, actual cards, physical.
That was the joke.
The people were the cards.
Because I remember
he made a house. He made a house out of children. That was a thing.
Yeah.
That was. God. I remember that being step up. We were talking about it. I was like, no, you don't understand. He made a house out of children, and like the sentence was out of my mouth, and I had not yet processed that sentence, and so. And the way I remember it, there was like a solid 2 beat of silence in the car. And then we all just lost it.
That was a hilarious car ride.
It was the last hilarious car ride I ever had. They've all been very dour, man. Since then.
I can't believe I could even breathe. I was laughing so hard.
So tell us your racism in the comments. Or how was your Thanksgiving? How many pieces of pie? Can anyone challenge my good faith estimate of 11 pieces of pie?
I wish I could. I'd love to have eaten that much pie.
I'm not even sure if that includes the piece I had last night, because they sent some home with us, and since Trish has had so little, I said, it's all for you, except the pumpkin. She doesn't like the pumpkin, and they sent a piece of pumpkin home, so I ate the pumpkin. Because I love pumpkin.
I do, too.
So, yeah, so tell us your pie count. See if you can beat me, or at least beat William. If you didn't have any pie, go have pie, and then comment what kind of pie it was. Please write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. This is our normal Monday schedule today, so we are just starting our week. I get to travel again this coming weekend. I didn't realize, but there's several Niblings choir concerts happening in drastically different places, drastically close together. So we'll have to see how that works. But in the meantime, everyone have a lovely little dip between the holiday sections here, or, you know, Thursday if you're Craig, I guess, assuming he still listens. And William, let's you and me go kill some people.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.